This podcast includes information provided by the issuer and does not express the views of the interviewer. This podcast may also include forward-looking statements by the issuer that involve certain risks and uncertainties to its business. Because forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, the issuer's actual results could differ from those indicated in this podcast. Welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you all so much for the support and for tuning in to the Planet Microcap Podcast. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Planet Microcap or me at Bobby K. Kraft, B-O-B-B-Y-K-K-R-A-F-T. You're listening to episode 6 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm really excited to announce that we published the Microcap Review Magazine Summer Fall 2015 issue, and it is now available. You can read the digital version of the magazine on stocknewsnow.com. Go to the Microcap Review tab on stocknewsnow.com and click on Current Issue. Please go check it out. Now, before we get started with our next interview on the Planet Microcap Podcast, I wanted to catch you up on what we featured last week on stocknewsnow.com. We featured articles highlighting video interviews with the following companies: Spectra Science Inc., SCIE on the OTC, Endeavor Silver Corp, EXK on the NYSE, and EDR on the TSX, Kaminak Gold Corporation, KAM on the TSX Venture, Hasco Medical Inc., HASC on the OTCQB. On Tuesday, we published our first audio-only SNN Q&A with Engagement Labs Inc., EL on the TSX Venture, as well as a Wall Street View with John Kaiser discussing the current natural resources market, plus our latest Metals Weekly wrap-up with the Morgan Report. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I spoke with Chris Lahiji from LD Micro. He hosts one of the biggest conferences in the microcap space. In every episode, we've talked about the importance of great management when investing in microcaps. In episode 1, Ian and I briefly covered this topic, and we came to the realization it's a critical component in the due diligence process. There's two stages, quantitative and qualitative due diligence. We've covered quantitative, and now it's time to look more closely at qualitative. Speaking with management is a key aspect to qualitative due diligence. You know, what's cool about when investing in microcaps is you can actually call the CEO or meet them at a conference if you have questions. I recently read a great article on microcapclub.com titled "The Art of Interviewing Management" by Chip Maloney, and I thought this would be a great topic for our next guest who facilitates these networking opportunities with the LD Micro Invitational and Main Event, which is this year, December 2nd and 3rd in Los Angeles. The goal for this episode is to prepare you for speaking with management and understanding that it's a skill that you can use to your advantage. Thank you again for tuning in to episode 6 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. I hope you enjoy my interview with Chris Lahiji from LD Micro. But first, a word from our sponsor.
A comprehensive streaming of market data, research, and portfolio management application for you. QuoteStream is a real-time streaming quotes and research system designed for the day trader, retail investor, institutional investor, both new and old. QuoteStream offers low latency, tick-by-tick data, advanced charting, comprehensive technical analysis, news, and research. With no software to install and no servers to maintain, QuoteStream is the ideal solution for you. Go to stocknewsnow.com and start your free 7-day trial. Click the QuoteStream banner in the header or real-time quotes in the nav bar to get started building and managing your investments.
In this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I spoke with Chris Lahiji. He's the founder and host of LD Micro Research Newsletter and Events. And our topic today is on talking to management of microcap companies. Chris, welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Bobby.
So we've spoken a couple times, you know, at different conferences on video. And I'm firstly just so thankful that you came onto the podcast and to share your thoughts with our audience. And as I said, today's topic is going to be on the art of talking with management. So before we get into that, can you give us a quick background on who you are and a little bit about the LD Micro events?
My pleasure. pleasure. Thank you again for having me. So my origin has been that I was a microcap investor, that I am a microcap investor. And I've been doing this now professionally since November of 2002. And the way that I define microcap is basically companies between 10 and 300 million. After 300 million, I think it becomes small cap, and under 10 million, I think it's nano cap. So, you know, when you have a passion in something, you always want to kind of be the best at it. And the way that I always approached it, the reason I always loved the space so much is because it was a lot easier to get a hold of management teams at smaller valuations. So the example is, if you're pissed off at Pepsi, it's going to be pretty hard to set up a meeting with Indira Nooyi unless you're a very large influential shareholder or you know, someone with incredible leverage in society. You can't do that. There's not a lot of insight that you can get in Pepsi. But if it's a smaller company, like, for example, Explore Technologies, it's much easier to pick up the phone and talk to the CEO, Phil Sassauer. So the more I did it, the more I realized that, you know, this is something that I wanted to pursue, and, you know, we've been doing it ever since. And my motto has always been, the smaller the company is, the more important management becomes. And the reason we do the event is because of managerial access. Most of the companies, in this case the Invitational, I believe the average market cap was roughly $92 million. And, you know, it was a great array of names and managers and executives who wanted to showcase why their companies are unique to our audience, to other hedge funds and mutual funds and bloggers and analysts and things of that nature. So it's great, and I'm more than happy to ask and to answer any of your questions.
Sure. So, you know, the last few episodes that we've done, and in starting from the first episode, we've been talking about finding new microcap ideas. We just did an episode talking about screening for them, you know, what is a stock screener. And then in the last episode, we talked a little bit about defining different quantitative metrics. Part one, you know, as I told my last guest, we couldn't go through all of them in one session because there's just too many. So we're now at the point where, okay, I screen for all my stocks. I kind of have a few that I want to look at a little bit more closely. Why at this point, after I've done that, as a savvy, you know, an investor who's really taking his time or her time to figure out what they want to put their money into, why is it then necessary to speak with management?
I want to preface by saying there are some organizations, there are some investors who never talk to management. They never do, regardless of whether they're pissed or not. They just take a very passive approach. But in most circumstances, in my opinion, you're going to have questions that are ultimately going to be that you're going to need answers to. So what better way of getting your answers than going straight to the horse's mouth or going straight to the source? So, you know, it perplexes me that someone could be so good at analyzing something that they wouldn't have any questions. One way or another, I think it's important to be able to establish a connection with the executives. And in many cases, when I started, I have a very different, unorthodox approach when it comes to meeting with these guys. Well, the usual story is that guys come in and they're relatively dry, and they ask a bunch of annoying free cash flow questions, and it makes the CEO or CFO relatively defensive from an early period. What I like to do is kind of get a semblance of what they want to talk about, and then slowly but surely go into my own questions. We could spend an entire year basically kind of talking about, you know, some of the advantages of what they have to say, and most importantly, what they don't say. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes not answering a question is more valuable than answering it, at least insightfully. So it's one of these things where I love talking to companies, because sometimes I may see something on paper that looks bad until I ultimately call these guys and they offer me a good reason or a good description. Mm-hmm. There's no way in hell you'll know everything from the outside looking in. Eventually, you're going to have to open the door and go inside.
when you're talking about, you brought this up earlier when it came to Pepsi, and I was actually going to use the example of Facebook and Apple. You really don't have, or it's tough to get access to these, you know, to, I don't know if Zuckerberg will take my call. I'm using them as an example, and also even Pepsi. Why is it important when investing in microcaps to really speak with it, with management, when we know that in large caps, it's not totally necessary? And even still, juxtaposing that with the point that you did bring up, that there are still people who do invest in microcaps that don't ever speak with management. But let's say, for instance, we're talking to a crowd that really should be, because they're still developing their investment strategies. So why is it important when it comes to microcaps to speak with management?
Well, because they have, you know, look, if Tim and Zuckerberg are no longer at the helm, there is still enough hierarchical power to manage those businesses relatively seamlessly, okay? And this was the argument when Steve Jobs passed away. You know, Steve hasn't been at the helm for roughly 4 years, but the system that was in place was created to operate whether he is there or not. So on a larger scale, I think that the top guys are less important, as opposed to a smaller company where there really isn't a hierarchical understanding or structure, where, you know, these companies are still trying to get deals done and contracts signed and need good marketing or good salespeople. So the work that you do hands-on, I mean, I don't know what it's like to be a CEO at a big company, but I think it's almost like flying at a 35,000-foot, with a 35,000-foot view, where, you know, when something kind of bubbles up, you will ultimately address it. You can't do that shit when you're a CEO of a small company. Everything gets to you. Everything hits your desk. So the guy who is best able to execute this, and the guy who can get the cash flow break even and remain dependent from outside investor money, that's the guy that I'm looking for. So I want to say that there's a lot of companies that look great on paper, and you're like, why is the stock so cheap? And then you meet management, and then you say, that's why the stock is so cheap. Mm-hmm. And in other cases where a company doesn't look that great on paper, but you meet with management, and you like what you see, and you like what you hear. So that's why I always say, the smaller it is, the more important management becomes, because it's true. You know, Coca-Cola, Home Depot, Disney, these guys have systems in place, man. I mean, I think they would probably operate fine even if they didn't have any executives. But we can't say that because, you know, these guys are worth $20 million a year. I don't think they're worth anywhere near that. And, you know, what's fascinating is that in the 30s, the guy, the lowest paid and the highest paid was 6-1. So in this case, if the highest salary was $60,000, the lowest salary would be 10. Today it's like 2,500-1. So the lowest paid guy is 20 grand a year, and the highest paid guy is like 50 million. So I think that, you know, in terms of compensation and stuff, I think a lot of this is just, you know, you need us to operate, when in reality, I think a lot of these things would just survive on their own.
Yeah, you know, you see these companies, they look good on paper, but the management is whatever, and vice versa. In that sense, what types of questions should I be asking, and is that sector dependent? You know, how does that work?
My line of questioning is almost always predicated on the future. But let me kind of go back to what we were talking about, because I think I want to give you guys a great example, and our listeners a great example. There's a company called AquaPure Ventures. It's AQE on the venture. Apple, Quail, Eric on the TSX. And on the venture on the TSX. So there was this gentleman who was the founder and CEO of this company. And I cannot remember his name at this moment, and of course I'm drawing a blank. But this man put his entire heart and soul into this thing. And he put, I think, over $12 million of his own money. And this was going to be it. Everyone was really excited. And then, unfortunately, he passes away out of the blue. AquaPure today is not an operating business, or if it is, they've kind of ceased most of their operations. So in this case, it's a clear example that the smaller something is, the greater the impact will be on who management is. When you go to these companies, you want to ask questions. I think at least everyone has their own style of questioning. For me, it's always about trying to figure out the mechanics of the business, you know, what they've done in the past, where they're strong at, where they're weak at, what the big variables are that, you know, they can't control that would make a positive or negative impact to the company. And then ultimately the future. You know, why are you going to be successful? You know, how could you be so sure? You know, what is it that your competition is doing that you don't know about? You know, how would you kick your own ass? Which is a question that I rarely ask, because it's like, what is your competition doing to put you, to take you out? And what's important is you got to have a semblance of trust and understanding with these guys. You got to feel your flow, and once they feel it, then you can start asking the tougher questions. So, you know, I mean, these are things that you're not going to get reading a 10-Q. You just won't.
So basically you're saying, you know, you really need to assess when you're approaching the companies, what is my downside risk? You've read everything, you've seen everything online, you've looked at their beautiful websites and their beautiful presentations and everything like that. So this is really the opportunity where you have to say, okay, now I have to figure out a line of questioning to figure out how I could possibly lose, in a sense.
How you could possibly lose?
Yeah, if I put my money in here, like what are the things that are in, like what's going on in the company where I could potentially lose all my money if I were to invest in it?
This is the easiest question you've given me. Everything is, Bobby, is based off cash burn.
Yeah.
So you have to look at it as, you know, one of those hourglass, you know, the ones with the sand in it, and then you turn it around and the sand goes down a little slit. If a company is not making money, that sand is coming down, and the point is that you have a limited shelf life if you are not cash flow positive. And that's the reason why most microcap companies fail. They can never get that balance. So almost all my questions are concerning cash burn, and then what they could do to ultimately get more money in the door, so that they can ultimately not only pay everything off, but have a little bit towards the end. The saddest reality of all is most microcap companies never get to this phase. And I don't know exactly what the number is. I wish I knew, but I would say that an overwhelming majority of companies are not profitable and won't be for any time soon. So that's where my questioning is, because I know that you only have a limited amount of time. And if that time runs out, guess what? There's no operation. Yeah. And if there's no operation, there's no value. There's no value, your stock is worthless.
So do your questions vary based on what sector the company is? So, you know, do you have different questions for a healthcare microcap company versus a mining company versus a technology versus a consumer goods company?
Yes. There are different lines of questions, but they all go back to the same thing. When the hell are you going to get self-sufficient? When is it that you no longer need anything from us? When is it when you can ultimately take the money that's coming in, the excess money, and become an even bigger, more powerful entity? So, yeah, I mean, I think questioning is directly correlated with which companies historically have the fastest cash burn. So historically, that would be biotech and medtech. So our line of questioning is much more defensive if we know that historically these companies, the more companies fail in the sector, the more defensive we are within our questions. As opposed to if something is already making money, the question kind of then transfers where, how can you make more money? So it's trying to get to the root of it. And, you know, depending on the executives that you meet with, some are much more welcoming than others. Mm. You know, there was this gentleman that when I would ask a question, he would basically take out the 10K, find what the answer is, and then repeat it word for word. Because he was afraid of, he thought that, you know, having a conversation was Reg FD. It's not. And that's fine. I don't mind that either. It's almost like the safe harbor statement. Every presentation needs to have a safe harbor statement. But do you honestly, Bobby, know anybody who reads that?
Oh, I read it word for word.
Yeah, you do. But nobody else does.
Well, I've been to enough of your events and watched so many presentations, I think I've memorized it at this point.
Well, supposedly, and I don't know if you know this, there have been three people in the history of the conferences that have read the entire safe harbor word for word. I know for two for sure.
Nice. So you actually bring up, you know, that last story you just said about the guy who just read off his 10K to you. It actually leads into my next question. You know, what if I don't get the CEO on the phone or they're not at the conference? You know, now what?
Try their investor relations. Try a board member and see if he would talk with you or they would talk to you. She would talk with you. But in any case, if there is absolutely no point of contact, either the marketing department or investor relations or anything like that, I would just say do the best with what you have, which is try to get as much information on the company both internally and externally.
In your opinion, what do you think is the difference between speaking with management over the phone or at a conference? You know, which one do you prefer? And I think I know the answer to that, but I'll let you answer it. But what are the advantages and disadvantages to both?
I think it's one of these things where, you know, 95% of my meetings are over the phone. I think in person, you know, it's, Bobby, I mean, I hate to use this analogy, but it's like looking at a photo of a beautiful person. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh my God, this person is so beautiful. And then you meet them and it's like, they're not very friendly. They're mean to the waiter. They have bad breath. You know, it's, I think no matter how much people try to automate everything and make it, you know, integrate robotics and AI and, you know, autonomous machines, no matter how much they do this, there is no alternative for the human element. On paper, I probably am a nightmare. Look at me on paper. I'm basically a junior college dropout who didn't really have very good scores in high school, who got an F in speech, and that is true, an F in speech, that really didn't have anyone in the financial services business. My dad didn't go to Princeton. My mom wasn't a neurosurgeon or a congresswoman. I didn't have any of that. But when people see me in person, they don't care. So what I'm trying to say is that there are some people that resonate. There's some people that you feel good with. There are some guys that give you confidence. And that's the difference between the phone and in person. Over the phone, you can't feel it. In person, you can.
So what are some of the questions that maybe we should avoid or we shouldn't ask? Are there any that you tend to not ask?
I usually don't get in. And I mean, I've been, this is almost 13 years now. I've never really basically said, you get paid too much, you need to nip it in the bud. But it has come up a little bit over the last couple of years where it's like, dude, if you guys want really are serious about profitability, maybe you should start by kind of skimming some, you know, off the top from your salaries. But you don't ever want to do that. I think that's bad form. And, you know, I would try to be more of a positive bent than a negative one. As, you know, you don't want to really ask questions, you know, from a very cynical nature or from a bad place. You want to be able to basically be like, you know, I don't want to, there has to be some semblance of positivity where it's like, look, I know you guys kind of screwed up. you know, this last quarter. You know, your numbers were light. You know, what happened? And will it happen again? As opposed to, God, what a shitty quarter. You know, you should be ashamed of yourself. You know, it's like, what the hell happened? Do you see the difference?
Yeah.
I would be much more responsive to one than the other. You know, there was a CEO who recently kind of made me listen to some of his voicemails where it's like, you're a scumbag, you scumbag. Like, what's happening to the stock? Why is it going down? There are people like this, but I'm pretty sure that the CEO is not going to be calling them back. So, yeah, I mean, it's like you want to showcase that you're on the same team, but you don't want to kiss too much ass or be too negative either. Mm.
So, you know, you're also a conference organizer. Why is it important to not only be speaking with management in a one-on-one or, you know, at the cocktail party or just in passing, you know, why is it also important to watch the CEO present?
Well, I think you can answer this question better than I can. I think, you know, with presentations, whether they're webcasted or not, it does serve a useful utility. It does serve as a utility. But you just basically want to see how the executives present themselves, what they talk about, what they don't. I've always learned that the smaller a PowerPoint presentation is, the more likely it is that I'm going to make some money. So you kind of want to see them, you know. I always love to see CEOs when there's a vexing question or something doesn't go well in their slide deck. The reason I love seeing this is because I want to see how they react to it. And, you know, some of them react very well. There was one guy who literally had an individual who wouldn't shut up in San Francisco, and he was very cordial and polite through and through. So, you know, I think it has more to do with character than anything else.
Mm. That's a good point. And, you know, I've seen my fair share of things not working, and it's definitely impressive when a CEO can just get in there and they're like, you know, this is just, I have this for you guys, the presentation, but, you know, I got it memorized, so it's, you know, I don't really need this right now.
Yeah, the greatest talker, I mean, the most personal that I've ever met, that I've actually made money on, because most of the personal guys you don't make money on. So you can be the nicest, coolest guy to talk with, but if I lost 60% of my money, you know, damn, that still sucks. I can't say that I leave happy. But that the guy that I love the most is the CEO of Ultratech, Art. He has a very long Italian last name, so I just call him Art and his initial Z. This guy is like 70-some-odd years old. He is mentally faster than you and me combined. He is a whip when it comes to answering questions. He makes eye contact with everybody. You know, he's light. He's always in a jovial mood. And he gives you insight that you need to kind of put the equation together. That's what a CEO is all about. It's about being able to communicate. I don't think that John Chambers is a much more intelligent man than anybody else at Cisco. I don't know, but I don't think so, given his background. And he may not be as tech-savvy as some of the other guys that they have in the company, but boy, does he know how to communicate thoughts, ideas, integrate people together, talk in groups, really focus on the big picture and find a way of using their infrastructure to get it done. And good for him. I mean, what he built was pretty incredible after, I think, 20-some-odd years at the helm. So, like I said, all of this is just basically how you conduct yourself. And I've always wondered what people would think of me if I was a CEO. I hope that's never the case of a public company. But, you know, what would be my strengths? What would be my weaknesses? You know, what would I answer? What wouldn't I? I think about that, too.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. And so I got a fun question to ask you. I don't know if it's a fun question, more so as a warning sign. You know, let's say, you know, I'm at LD Micro or we're at the Growth Capital Expo and, you know, I want to do a one-on-one meeting with the CEO. It's my first time. I've never done one before and I'm really green. You know, it's with a company that I'm really stoked on. I did all my research. I know everything there is to know, at least on paper. I've watched every video. I'm like 95% I want to invest in this and I just want to speak with management and, you know, I have a great one-on-one, but I'm still like, I'm just asking, you know, yes or no questions. I think I'm getting the good answers. The guy's a slick Rick, you know, and upon actually making the investment, silly me, the company turns out to be a scam, you know, or they say or do things, you know, a lot of the things that they say or do just are not true or they never come to fruition. You know, in your experience, using maybe a story or two, you know, what are some tips to look out for when speaking with management?
A promotional CFO is almost always a really bad sign. You have to be I'm not saying just be dry as wood, but you have to showcase some semblance of financial understanding and discipline. The companies where the CFOs were more ambitious than the CEOs, I've lost my money in every single one.
So you got to look out for the CFOs, huh? Or the overambitious CFOs.
CEOs, when it comes to CEOs too, you really don't want to talk to someone who is basically talking about all the things that still haven't happened. You know, the only points, look at amateur golfers like me. I'll shoot 85 and tell you why it should have been a 74 or 73 or 72. A professional will come and say he shot 70, and that's it. Not 71, not why was it 69, or, you know, why was it worse at 72, 73? He just says, I shot 70. That's it.
Mm. Nice. Okay, so I want to end this on a really fun note. Like, give me the wackiest, funniest one-on-one meeting or meeting with management that you've ever had with a company. You may have been like, all right, I'm really stoked that this one looks like a good one, but you know, or not, you know, it just happened to be a crazy experience.
Eric Langan at Rick's Cabaret. I think Eric is such a joy. If Eric sold ice cubes to Eskimos, I think he would be very profitable. And I think I would invest alongside him in the business. Eric is just he does operate strip clubs, and a lot of people have a very negative view on in this case, with exploitation. But he is such a doll, such a wonderful man to talk with. And he'll talk to you about anything. The guy is incredible. I've never met any person who said that, you know, Chris wasn't fun to be with, or Eric wasn't fun to be with.
Well, and Chris too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes people like me. There's a lot of people that don't like me. You know, there was one guy who was a CFO. He called me a clown, and I said, "Well, would you rather be miserable, like every other asshole in this room?" And he didn't really say anything much after that.
Yeah.
I said, "Do you want me to grill you with a bunch of mathematical questions that you probably don't have the answers to?" It's your call.
That sounds like a real. I'm sure you really enjoyed your time hanging out with that guy. I think we're about to wrap up. What are some takeaways from this? You know, what should we keep in mind when we're going in, when, you know, LD Micro's coming up, you know, so as a, maybe as a first time investor or someone who's wants to come to conferences, you know, what should we be thinking about prior to the event? You know, how should we approach it?
Be proactive. Notify the companies ahead of time when you want to speak with them. Give them real, legitimate contact info. Give them flexibility to answer your questions, and then we'll see from there.
Cool. So when is the event coming up?
We'll do a small shindig in San Francisco on September 8th. 20 companies, 20 minutes each, 20 investors. And then we'll do the main event on December 2nd and 3rd.
It's, I know we're looking forward to it. We love the main event every single year. I mean, if you want to talk about, I'd be close to 200 companies that are going to be there this year?
Yeah, there's going to be a ton. Yeah. But we're deliberately making it smaller than the previous year because 234 companies in the rain was as much as I could take.
Yeah, that was insane. I don't know how you pulled it off, but it was still one of the events of the year.
Thank you.
Alrighty. So, Chris, where can we go and find more information about you, LD Micro, and all your upcoming events?
LDmicro.com. And if anyone has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Perfect. Thank you, Chris, so much for coming on to the Planet MicroCap podcast, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
My pleasure.
Thank you all for tuning in to the Planet MicroCap podcast, and thank you, Chris, again for coming on to the program. You can access the podcast by going on to stocknewsnow.com under podcast, go to podbean.com and search Planet MicroCap Podcast, or on iTunes and search Planet MicroCap Podcast. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Planet MicroCap Podcast, where we'll have our next week in review, answer a new question from Ask Mr. Wall Street, and have another exciting guest to discuss all things microcap. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast or for Ask Mr. Wall Street, please send an email to info@stocknewsnow.com. I'd love to hear from all of you. This podcast has been brought to you by SNN Incorporated, publishers of stocknewsnow.com, the official microcap news source, and the Microcap Review magazine. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you again for joining me on the Planet MicroCap podcast. Have a great week and a fantastic Labor Day, everyone.